Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Two-Headed Game Master. I'm Cosmo, the first head.
And I'm Dane, the out-of-five-stars head.
Two-Headed Game Master is a podcast about writing, designing, running, and playing role-playing games, where we discuss our favorite hobbies, share our thoughts with you, and play some games sometimes. You may have noticed we've been playing a lot of games. Well, two games, but a lot. There's been a lot of game-playing content. But what's up this time?
Well, a lot of hours of game-playing content. It was only the twice. Three times. Okay, semantics. yeah, we are going to be reviewing the Mothership system and starter adventure that we recently played. I believe only the first, episode is out. But, you know, the rest of the adventure will be released.
Yeah, bonus weekly, or off weeks. You know, it's fun. It's coming out. So, Mothership, you might ask, where do we get off reviewing something like this? Reviewing anything? What even are our credentials? Well, we bought it, so...
That pretty much allows us to say whatever we want.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the adult tour, so...
So you can drink.
And we can say
and you
whatever.
Can say whatever you want.
We want.
All right. Mothership. So we're going to be talking about the setting of Mothership. What is this game? We're going to be talking about what are the kind of novel mechanics. What are the things that make Mothership different from other, you know, any other pen and paper RPG? We're going to talk about the flow. There's a cool... acronym for Mothership. We're going to talk about some of the unique selling points of the product, and the starter adventure, Another Bug Hunt, which, as Dane said, we are currently playing through. Well, we've already played through it, but from the listener's perspective, we're still going through it. So, yeah.
What is Mothership? Well, if you weren't keeping up, it's a tabletop role-playing game. Published, Tuesday Night Games, who distributes it, at least. That's a fact. It's a sci-fi horror RPG.
Yeah.
So what is a sci-fi horror RPG? Many things.
Yeah.
They come in many sizes. We've mentioned some other ones on this podcast. But Mothership is a, like, pretty much an alien.
Yeah. I think that's the best, like, door to enter through. Just think of the Alien movies. It's that. But, you know, a copyright-safe version of that. It's dystopian, you know, space future with, you know, mining colonies and mean corporations, and also always there's, like, something weird and scary out there that wants to get you.
Yeah.
I made a little note here. This is... It reminds me of, like, when you describe, like, a classic fantasy setting. There's a lot of... there's a lot of shorthand kind of wrapped up in that. There's a lot of just, like, implicit when I say, like, oh, it's, you know, it's just... kind of classic fantasy. You know a ton about what that is already. Like, I probably don't need to tell you very much about who the elves and dwarves and orcs are if I tell you something is just kind of like classic fantasy, right? This is like that, but for, you know, sci-fi movies. So if you've seen any of the Alien movies, if you've seen The Thing or, you know, Space Odyssey, this is just that. This is all of that kind of genre shorthand in a kind of generic setting.
Yeah, it focuses less on the science and more of the fiction. Not to say there isn't, you know, some science in there, but, like, it's a lot less...
Well, there's, like... There is no explanation for how a terraforming machine does terraforming. It's not interested in science in that way. But there is spaceships and laser guns.
And terraforming
machines. And terraforming.
And gross monsters and vacuum suits and laser guns.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that is Mothership. If you've seen an Alien movie, you are 80% there, and then the rest of that 20% is just other scary space stuff.
One thing cool about the Mothership materials, somewhere in one of these frickin' books, is just like a long list of all the like references and their inspiration to pull from.
The appendix in or whatever.
Yeah, I don't know what book that has it in it, but...
I'll say, yeah. Okay, I'll start the review right now. Everything looks really good in this package, and I think we'll talk more about this later, but the outside of the books, they just say the same thing on them. Warden's Operation Manual. So somewhere in here is probably the appendix of what all inspired.
Yeah. Anyways, it's somewhere. Yeah. So, like, when you buy it for yourselves... you can find it.
Here we go. Recommended media.
There you go.
The Long Rain, The Stars, My Destination, Alien, The Thing, Starship Troopers, you know, so. And a bunch of other stuff. Books I haven't read. But most of the movies I've seen.
Joke's on them. I can't read.
I haven't read a book in years. I listen to them. Anyway, yeah.
So that's you were saying. That's kind of the setting.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about the actual system and the mechanics
mm-hmm.
in this beast. It uses a D20 roll under system. Isn't there a fancy name for that?
Well, it's a D100 roll under.
Yeah, that's what I meant to say. If I didn't say that.
I think. I've only ever heard it called a roll-under system, but maybe there's another word for that. So
I feel like there's a fancy term.
Yeah.
So you roll a D100, and...
you're trying to get under.
Under whatever your stat is.
Yeah. So having a high stat, having, like, you know, a 75 in something, that's good. You're three-quarters of the time gonna roll under, and that means success. It also, I really like, I'll just talk about this right now real quick because it's not going to come across very well in, audio, but the Mothership character sheet is a really, really great little piece of, design, I think, because one piece of paper tells you, it has all the information you need to build your character on it, pretty much. Except for some tables that you roll on for, like, knickknacks and, you know, specific information about gear. But it tells you how to create a character through these little flowcharts. And the way that skills stack onto the stats that you have is... It's like, outlined like a wiring diagram. So you know that, like, if you have this skill, these are the... you know, the more, what are they called? The expert skills? If you have
and
this,
like, mastery.
Yeah, if you have this basic skill, then it unlocks these expert skills, and you can choose based on, you know, this flowchart of a character sheet that is really, really easy to use and read, and when you look at it, you're like, oh, I understand the basics of how to play this game immediately.
Yeah, and it's very simple stat-wise, right? We mentioned skills.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a skill tree, but there's basically just four stats and then three save stats.
Yeah.
So I guess in total...
there's seven.
But everything comes down to one of those stats, right? Which has a number value attached to it,
mm-hmm.
and your skills... improve that role, you know, win that skill, or you know, improve your chances of success whenever you're doing that thing, like, you know, fixing a spaceship or studying a alien life form.
Mm-hmm. So, can it can sound, if you listened to the episode prior to this, and you heard us start to actually play this, I feel like it was made to sound more complicated than it is. I don't think it is a difficult thing to grasp, and if you actually, like, if you print out this character sheet and read it, you're like, oh, okay, I understand. And a, you know, a 2d10, that's a d100, roll under this number is a, it's a very simple concept to grasp, and everything else just kind of neatly stacks on top of that. It's very easy to start playing, and it does a thing that I personally really enjoy about pen and paper games, is when the rules and the mechanics are never getting in the way of me actually playing the game. I'm never stopping to look anything up. All the critical information is on your character sheet, and the way that you as a player character interact with the game is very simple. Now, the game master is still going to be looking some stuff up, especially if they're new to it, but player facing, it's very accessible and well done, I think.
Yeah, it's following that kind of trend in recent years for role playing, where simplified character sheets and players roll for everything, and kind of, you know what the difficulties are going to be, so like, because like, you know, those are what your stats are. So there's no question of like, oh man, we're going to try to kill this monster. Is there any way we can hit it? Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. What's your combat stat?
Right.
Oh, well, you
know. The monster doesn't have an armor class. Yeah. I have a
combat stat.
And I need to succeed at a combat roll. If I do that, I hit the monster.
Or when the monster attacks, you roll a body save. Mm-hmm. The monster doesn't roll for an attack. You roll a body save.
Yeah. Not every game is doing that, but I love it. I love players roll for everything. No fucking monster stats for the game master to keep track of.
It's definitely a more common thing these days.
Yeah. So, what else? Then there is the... So,
we talked about the
sci-fi
horror
universe that it is, but there's the horror side of that. Yeah. So, you have a specific stat that is for saving against fear-related stuff.
And sanity.
And sanity. You have one for each. And when you fail any roll, you build up stress. And then there are triggers for when you get stressed out enough, you roll panic saves to have or not have a trauma response. And your trauma response is a prompt based on what class you are. So you're going to be stacking up stress, because every time you roll, you're either succeeding or adding a stress point. And then, you know, eventually you get to this point where you are stressed out enough to start stressing the people around you out as well. You're having your trauma response, which is upsetting other people or making it so they roll worse.
To clarify, so the stress is like a health counter,
mm-hmm.
right? In Mothership, you start with a minimum stress, and then when you gain a certain amount of stress, something happens.
Mm-hmm.
You gain stress in multiple ways, right? Like Cosmo mentioned, every time you fail a roll, automatic stress. But you can also, as a character or as a player, be like, you know what? My character does not like that monster coming out of that skin.
Add a stress.
I'm going to add a stress. Or the game master says, you know,
take one stress.
That's a very stressful situation you find yourself in.
Yeah.
Take a stress. So the, like, stress and fear and panic mechanic... let's talk about the sanity versus fear save first, okay. Right? Because those are different things.
They are.
I'm trying to find exactly how the book describes the difference between them. But if I remember correctly, the sanity save is for, like, something that you can't comprehend. Like, you try to picture a giant crab monster hiding in a, like, man-sized skin suit. Be like, I don't understand how that works.
Yeah.
Boom.
It's sanity esoteric. Save. It's cosmic horror.
Right.
And so you sanity against that. But both things, when you fail, because you fail them, you know, a lot of the time, both things add to your stress, and then your stress triggers traumatic, you know, a trauma response.
I think it's in this one. And the fear is more of, like, a monster tried to attack you.
Physical
with
danger.
With a gross, like, acid spit. You dodged the acid spit, but it scared you.
Yeah.
So take a...
You don't want that acid on
or
you.
Or do a fear save. I think it's actually in this book. Yes. Sanity. So rationalize logical inconsistencies in the universe. Fear is maintain a level head while struggling with fear, loneliness, depression, or other emotional surges. So sanity is kind of like your brain, and fear is kind of your emotions.
There's a number of other things.
Well, do we want to go through the panic?
Kind of going on. Yeah, let's talk about those.
So,
because it's pretty much built on this cycle where, like, as you go through a mission, these are going to build up until, and
right, because that's important, because your stress level directly relates to this panic roll.
Yeah.
Right. So as your stress builds up, panic is more and more likely. Panic checks can happen for several reasons, right? You know, obviously, always, whenever you want, right? Whenever you, the player, is like, you know what?
I panic. Or I maybe, you know, panic, you know.
I think I might panic right now. Or, you know, I also think I'm going to take a stress. You can do that at any time. But there's also, you know, specific things where you have to, right? So, like, when you crit fail a save or a stat check, got to make a panic roll. So panic rolls are with a d20. And you got to roll under your stress. Or is it over?
You had to roll over. Because the more stress you have, the more likely
right.
you are to fail.
Yeah. So to succeed, to not panic, you have to roll over your stress level, which caps out at 20, right? D20. So if you have 20 stress, the next time you do a panic check, you automatically panic.
And you're never going to have zero. Everyone starts with like 2.
Minimum is 2. And then, like, depending on how shit goes, like, you might take a severe wound.
Yeah.
That might increase your minimum stress.
So there's always a chance that if you do make a panic check, you might panic, even if it's the very beginning.
Even if it's you got your toe on the the planet.
Yeah, you just set foot on the planet. You still might panic there because, you know, there's still a 10% chance of panicking in that situation. But every time you stress, that goes up by 5%. And you're gonna stress.
Do you want to talk about wounds? We mentioned the wound table.
I think the wound table is fucking sick. The wound table is, like, the best version of what we initially came up with for our afterlife system. So there's two things going on, and these affect... do the wounds affect monsters or just player characters?
They can affect monsters.
They can affect monsters as well. So on your character sheet, there is a hit points thing. The thing with the hit points is that you can lose all your hit points lots of times. Just every time you lose it, you take a wound, and you have a set number of wounds that you can take. The wounds are on a D10 scale divided by, you know, severity. So, you know, the double zero is just a flesh wound, and then minor injury, major injury, lethal injury, which leads it to a death save, and then fatal injury, also death save. And then they're divided into, like, what is the mechanism of wound? Blunt force, bleeding, gunshot, fire and explosives, gore and massive trauma, I assume, is what is implied there.
Just massive ass wound.
Yeah, just massive ass wound. So, gunshot. Say, you know, you take a gunshot and the damage maxes out your hit points, so you take a wound. Now your hit points reset. And you roll a D10. And say you got, 0-4. Internal bleeding. Okay. Now you're suffering with this, and it's narrative, it's gritty, it's punishing, and the way you get it, the way this elegant little chart hands those conditions out is just really well designed, I think. And it's I'm jealous of how well they did it.
The Afterlife one is pretty cool and extremely similar to this.
It is extremely similar.
It's not quite as tight because it's a little more open. Afterlife is a little more open with weapons and incoming damage, whereas this is... They're short little books, right? So they include a lot of weapons, but, like, it's not infinite amounts.
Right.
Right, it's basically just,
there's
everything from those movies that we listed.
There's a two-page spread of cool-looking guns, but there's not, like, The gear is not really a focus of this game. The gear is kind of standardized across this generic sci-horror universe. One gun is essentially... is very similar to any other gun you're going to come across.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much all the... Well, not all the mechanics. There's obviously some smaller ones and more detailed, nuanced things. But I think that's the kind of basic idea, at least the ones that we wanted to highlight.
Yeah. I would say this isn't particularly novel, but the little miniature GM screen that you get and the Warden's Handbook for the Game Master... There's just a lot of really great random generation tables using D10s, D100s, and D20s for just whatever. There's and these help you prompt if you've not played this before and you're not sure. Okay, like I'm panicking. How do I behave? Well, there's a little table to suggest or. On the character creation side, there's a couple really cool things that I like. There's a D100 table of patches that your character is wearing on their spacesuit, and if you've not tried it, this is gonna sound like I'm just blowing smoke, but I think it's really cool how much characterization you get from some of those patches. And if you're if you're going down the list and picking one or just randomly rolling to see, what patch does my character have? Suddenly, your character has, taken on dimension. Because, who are they and why would they put on this funny patch? Mm-hmm. And you start thinking about them as if they're a real person. It's a great way to, slip into the role-playing headspace.
That it is. So, talk about actually how Mothership plays.
Okay.
They have a great little acronym. Those are what they're called.
Yeah.
In the game, in the Warden's Operation Manual, right, the GM book, kind of outline how Mothership adventures go. It's called the Tombs Cycle, TOMBS. And we thought that was really cool. Definitely vibes with the horror atmosphere and all those media references that they make and stuff. Is they got a great little arc here. Right, so it starts with this transgression, right, which is the act of knowingly or unknowingly awakening a horror. Yeah.
Somehow you've crossed this boundary.
Right, somewhere some silly scientist was like, well, you know what? What if we touch this thing?
Mm-hmm.
I think something else.
So all of the Alien movies basically follow this, but I think The Thing is a really good one.
Mm-hmm.
So the transgression...
is pulling the thing out of the ice.
Yeah, there's something in the ice.
Don't do that.
that might be a terrible idea. I don't know. But, you know, you're scientists. What are you going to do? Not pull the interesting thing out of the ice? So, transgression. Great. Omens start appearing.
Right. Signs and signals. Weird rashes. Weird scorch marks.
The dog behaves
strangely. Weird noises. Yeah. Weird behavior. Things that... Well, they're fucking omens. I don't know. Go look up a dictionary.
It's a fucking omen.
After the omens comes the manifestation, right? The horror reveals its true form to the players, right? So, like, yeah, the thing, spooky dog, but that's not actually what the thing is. The thing can take any form, and it could be anybody.
And then it starts doing that. And a couple people die.
That's the manifestation. It's not like, oh, we see a scary dog monster. It's you understand the true nature, like the true form of this horror. And it's scary. It's usually not what you originally thought. Then starts the banishment phase, where it's like the race against the clock to destroy the horror, put the cat back in the bag, close Pandora's box or whatever.
And you're going to do this, you know, somehow. You're going to have to figure out how. Like, you figure out what it responds to during manifestation, learning from manifestation, from that phase. Like, oh, it ran away from fire or whatever. And then, yeah, banishment, I think, is a good term for it, because it means, like, go away. But it doesn't say that, like, you got rid of it. It doesn't say you fixed it. It doesn't say even that you won.
I mean, this is the do or die section. So, like, you got to come up with a plan to fix it. Might not work, right? Plan might be bad.
Yeah.
But, like, at least there's a plan and there's some action to be taken. And, like, this is where life and limb are at risk. And, like, it's a long shot. It's crazy, but it just might work kind of deal.
Yeah.
The last act is the slumber. So if the players are successful in the banishment phase, like the plan works, then great. You know, you destroyed the alien virus, right? Or you cured the people who were sick with it. Doesn't mean it's gone forever. Mm-hmm. Just means your crew is cured.
Yeah.
Right? The next person to go to that stupid ice moon and dig around looking for minerals is probably going to get infected, and they're probably going to go through the whole thing, but it's not your problem.
Yeah.
So.
It's not your problem, hopefully. Mm-hmm. It might be.
So, like, horrors are rarely defeated permanently in this universe, right? It's always just about kicking it down the road, surviving another day.
Yeah.
That's a success in Mothership.
And it's a really good... it's a really good, like, you know, five-act... And they describe them as acts in the Warden's Manual. It's a really good five-act structure to a story. And there's also, in the beginning of the Warden's book, there's terrific tables for generating each phase of it. There's a bunch of different examples of possible transgressions, a bunch of different
omens,
manifestations. So, you know, if you're like, I love this vibe, but I don't have anything specific in mind, you can whip up a one-shot for the afternoon real quick because of how effective these random tables are. And for the first few years of our role-playing just... career experience, whatever, I didn't really like the idea of random tables. I was like, well, as a game master, you know, I've probably got something deliberate in mind. But these are really good. These are really really evocative. And I'm still going to come up with my own thing, you know, based on them. But they're the right kind of just, you know, juicy suggestions to get you excited about an idea.
I mean, that would be a unique selling point.
Yeah, I'd say.
Not like other games don't have
random juicy tables. Yeah.
Tables. But we've played this one. We've gotten all up in the guts of Mothership. And the tables are well thought out, interesting, exciting. So, boom. Unique selling point.
Yeah. Yup. Okay, what are some other ones?
It comes... I mean, the core set here comes with some cardboard minis.
Yep.
That's pretty cool.
Little plastic stands for them. You punch them out. I think they're specifically for the starter adventure that the box comes with, and we'll talk about that.
In a sec.
We'll talk about that later. But it's cool that they did that. They didn't have to bother. The whole thing is just pretty... it's a pretty high-quality little package. I think it costs about $40, so less than one core book of Dungeons & Dragons.
You hear that, Dandy?
Yeah, you hear that, Wizards?
Get fucked.
There is a player handbook, a warden handbook, a monster manual, which they call unconfirmed sightings, or unconfirmed contact reports. Which is cool, very evocative, and then a spaceship thing. The spaceship stuff seems like maybe the weakest part of the game. It doesn't seem like it wants you to spend very much time.
We also didn't dive into it at all during our plays. So,
but it's certainly not a robust space combat simulator. It's just, you know, there's
which is fine because space combat is hard to bring
rough.
The horror.
Yeah, you're. You know,
space is too damn big.
Yeah, fighter pilot stuff is just, it's not what it's for, but there is just some interesting spaceship stuff, and they went ahead and filled out an entire booklet with it. I actually think it's a little bit antithetical to how well this game lends itself to like horror one shot type stuff, or not necessarily one shot, but like single adventure. The idea that a crew is going to be successful and unscathed enough in one adventure to, you know, then get on a spaceship and adventure somewhere else is a little bit of a tall order, it sounds like. But, you know, we only played one thing.
Yeah. That's interesting. I took it as like the crew, a ship and crew.
Hmm.
Can survive, but the individual players, you know, deal with all this horror. So, like, the ship is basically an NPC, and, like, the skeleton crew of the ship is also just NPC, you know, don't fuck with it. But, like, individual members of the crew are the players, and so, like, you know, the ship can last for months and, like, gain a reputation, and then, like, that can inform... You know, what kind of role... Because I was looking at the adventure... What do they call it? Or campaigns.
Oh, okay.
Like the campaign kind of frameworks. Which book is that in? Shoot. I think it's the Warden book.
I'd imagine the Warden one, but...
Yeah. But they were like, you know, space truckers or... Mercenaries or dogs of war, bounty hunters, here it is, like corporate inspectors, off-world colonists, like these frames for the campaign, like most of these would go good with a ship, like mining and salvage.
Oh, yeah.
Right? But the ship's not like, you know, a fighter jet that flies in and, you know, is at risk of getting destroyed all the time.
Right. It's your base and your
home.
And so, yeah, so there is material included in the starter set to create that. And
You know, like,
it doesn't seem like you're going to engage with it really in depth, but it's cool that it's there.
Like, what was it in Forbidden Lands? A keep?
A keep, yeah. A stronghold in old school D&D. Parlance. Yeah, so, like, the whole package is cool. It comes with the dice you need, two D10s, one of them as the double digits, one of them as the single digits. and the D20. Those are the only dice you need. So fairly tight, coherent design. You only need three dice to play the game. I like rolling different dice, but it's well thought out this way. And it comes with a starter adventure, in addition to the neat little box that holds everything.
Before we talk about that, last little thing, it's got a very slick character app.
Oh, yeah.
For free.
Forgot about that.
That's just extremely... And, like, we had mentioned the character sheets, real cool and real easy with the... It's a flowchart, and the app makes it even easier.
Yeah. The app is just the Mothership app, and it just... It'll boop you up a character in no time with all the stuff on it, and, you know, you might be like, oh, I'm not sure what that is. Well, just tap on it. It'll tell you what that piece of gear is. And, you know, so if you got... You got new players, you don't want to really mess around with the process of character creation. They can just go through it. They can pick at each prompt or randomize each prompt. And, yeah. In less than a minute, you could have a ready-to-go character. And then you're playing Mothership, which is pretty cool. Speaking of playing Mothership...
You might even play another Bug Hunt. Alright, so another Bug Hunt is the little intro adventure that comes with the core set. So included in the core set is this little booklet that is 43 pages long. And it's, we didn't even get through... Wow. I mean, we got through the ends, but, like, you know, there's a secret
ending.
There's
other endings. Stuff we did not access, stuff we did not explore.
Well, unless you are a patron and listen to the whole thing live, you wouldn't be able to know this. But I'm going to tell you anyways in this episode. Is like we got to the banishment phase, and like the players kind of succeeded. Like they... did their mission, they got off planet, but then they all died. Spoilers. So, you know, they failed the banishment. They didn't put the cat back in the box, in Soapy's box.
We just kind of lived through that day, and then, well, whoops. Turns out we didn't do it good enough.
But to get up to that point took us, what, like 7 hours, something like that?
We had
a couple breaks in
between. Yeah, there was some breaks, but it was a good amount of adventuring.
Good long adventure. Definitely don't need to do it in one sitting.
I would actually say, if you didn't set up like we did to start right after work and set the entire night aside for this, this would be tough to do in a single sit down one shot.
I think it needs its 7 hours.
Yeah, and you probably probably aren't doing regular sessions of 7 hours. So this is a short adventure that you'd probably play over a couple of sessions.
Yeah, I mean you can obviously cut stuff out. Let's say that. So the kind of organization of the intro adventure, I thought was real tight, and also if you've been faithfully listening along, we kind of did a module booklet back to back, right? We did the Fae Sisters' Fate right before this, which was a module booklet. And so I can't help but compare the two kind of modules. Mothership, or another Bug Hunt, definitely had a lot more meat in there. Written down, like each area was only a couple pages, but there is so much information packed on these pages. And not in a, like, unfindable manner. Because, like, sometimes you read something where there's a shitload and, like, you could just, you can never find anything again. Mm-hmm. This isn't the case. Everything's got good headings and...
It's not like Morkborg.
Yeah.
Where it's a, you know, it's like a punk rock abstract piece of art.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to, you know, you have to parse it in order to read the fucking rules. And... there's some fucking cool stuff about that. Morkborg and Cyborg are awesome in that they are also just like a piece of art to look at, the book itself. But I would say Mothership booklets are just as impressive artistically and layout-wise, but they're also fucking, like, actually readable.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say as impressive, because, like, this page spread, not a single picture on this.
That's a picture.
That's a map.
Yeah.
That's a diagram.
I mean, it's...
not a piece of
like,
art.
Like, it is a drawing, you know, air quotes, in a air Google quotes. Document made of, you know, shapes and dotted lines, but it yes. is a, you know, it is a visual element.
It's a visual element. It's not a piece of...
No, it's not a piece of, like, world. Character art yeah, or a yeah. landscape or a monster.
So anyways, we're getting off track.
Yeah.
The flow of the adventure, and like each zone has its own little map and areas, and they're all numbered and labeled, and it tells you just some like tidbits about what's in there, as well as kind of tips and tricks along the way, like for example, I'll read one of these or summarize or whatever. The first area is like noticing things. You know, you might be tempted to call for like a roll for everything. Like you walk into a room, what do you see? Roll for it. But try waiting to see what the players do. If they go slowly, if they don't make a lot of noise,
mm-hmm.
you know, let them just like have all the time in the world. They're fine, the stuff that's there. Like if they're like, yeah, we carefully search the room. No roll required.
Mm-hmm.
Just tell them what's there.
I like that philosophy about rolling, you know, the idea of not finding something because of a perception roll.
Something kind of sucks. We didn't talk about it. It's in the Warden's handbook, I believe, but it's advice about when to call for a roll in Mothership. And it basically boils down to a like three, do you have these three things system? So like when to call for a roll, like if the stakes are high and the outcome is uncertain and they don't have the right tools, right? But if they have one of those things, right, like if the stakes aren't high, like we try to open this locked door,
mm-hmm.
well, like is the door gonna kill them? No, then they're probably gonna be able to do it, or should be able to do it,
right?
Do they have a crowbar or a key? Or do they have, like, what you would call infinite amount of time
right.
to figure it out?
There's a monster coming around the corner right now.
Mm-hmm.
If that's the situation, they're going to have to roll for it. Yeah. Because if they fail the roll, now they're in a monster fight. But if they succeed in the roll, they get through the door, slam the door behind,
mm-hmm.
put the door between themselves and the monster. Otherwise, yeah, why roll for it?
Right. Now, of course, like, if the door leads to the control room, which is, like, their end goal, maybe they have to find the key,
mm-hmm.
right? So, like, I would just say that to your players. It's like, there's no way you
Without
can break
the key.
This door. You would have to spend 3 days here, and you don't have enough food for that.
Yeah.
So you're gonna have to come back.
The monster will for sure find you.
Yeah. So that's pretty cool. Those are good rules to live by, in term not just in Mothership, I think in all.
It's good advice, I think, for most games.
Role playing systems. But yeah, I thought talking about story of another bug hunt it's exactly how it sounds. It's another bug hunt.
Yeah.
A aliens.
It's a
with an S on it.
Explicit reference to aliens. And it's basically aliens.
Team of players drop down on a not necessarily uninhabited, but like newly or sparsely inhabited,
newly colonized
planet.
Early terraforming.
There's a terraforming base. There's a security detail. Everything's gone dark, and like you know, the company's like, gotta go figure out what happened and get the terraforming back up.
Mm-hmm.
And then of course, you know, bad stuff. There's monsters. Surprise.
Mm-hmm. It's as we went through the whole thing, I was pretty impressed with how many of the specific beats from Aliens it actually hit, while tweaking them to fit better for like a role-playing experience, like a player-facing thing. It was pretty good. So you're not playing actually as like the Marine Strike Team. The Marine Strike Team was already there and went dark. And you're kind of finding stuff out about them, or meeting some of them, possibly. The friction between the survivors who you do meet, like, well, you know, we just blow it up. Oh, we can't leave yet. There's missing people still. And weighing all of those conflicting priorities that we had to do as players, that worked really well, and it led to a dramatic final moment where we chose to let some things go because we're like, we don't have time for that, or we don't have the manpower to see this all the way through. Some things are going to have to slip through the cracks in order for us to get some level of success. And you know, there's always someone at some point saying like, oh well, you can't do that, you can't do it that way, and you're going to have to, you know, the players are going to have to make hard decisions about that. In character, in universe, it worked really well, I think.
I think one, and it could have just been the way I set it up, because I had everybody make two characters.
Mm-hmm.
Which is recommended somewhere. Right here. It's a good idea to have some extra characters that the players can take over if their character dies.
Mm-hmm.
We did have a little problem getting... After you completed the first area, you guys kind of didn't want to leave.
Well, so I wanted to leave. I just was thinking, like, maybe a different character. And that, yeah, that spiraled into, like, well, are we doing anything? In the worst sort of way, where, like... So I mentioned that the Marine Strike Team is not who you're playing as. They've already been there and already mm-hmm. kind of been hit by this thing. This scary space scariness.
Mm-hmm. Contagion.
I think the reason they did it that way, whoever wrote this adventure, is because, you know, if you're playing as the soldiers have clear...
they approach a problem with their gun.
Yeah, and they also have, like, rank structure. So if someone is more in charge, they say, like, we're doing this, and mm-hmm. A deliberation becomes orders, right? That's difficult. I can't think of a situation where it'd be a good idea to, like, hey, we're starting an adventure. Let me assign ranks to you guys. And you have to do what, you know, someone of higher rank says. That's not really a great way to set up a role-playing party. But it honestly is something we maybe kind of needed in that situation, is for someone in charge to tell us, you know, what to mm-hmm. do. And we did resolve it, and, you know, you game mastered us through that. But I don't think that has a lot to do with the way this module is written. We hit a snag.
Well, I think it's important to touch on that. Mm. I think possibly it lends itself as what do they call that? A glowing endorsement of the horror that this game can provide.
Okay. Yeah.
Where you guys were
like, there was a
scared.
Frozen kind of moment where, like, oh, I don't want to go through the jungle to the second location. Who the fuck knows what's out there?
Mm-hmm. Like, I don't feel prepared for this.
Yeah.
I want, like, a different character who's better at, like, guns because, like, that fight went bad.
It seems like, yeah. It seems like we could handle this differently, and I don't know if my character's good for handling this, but you got to. And, yeah. I'd say you could read it that way. You could read it as...
I think there's definitely...
Like, it was scary.
...an aspect of that, and then I think, you know, there's some form of better setup and being clear as, like, the game master is like, okay, so, like, I have made two characters, but, like, you pick your primary character and they're there and that's who you're going to play as until they die. And if they die, I'm going to work the other characters in. But, like, you can't just go back and swap the ship because you're scared.
Right.
You know, something like that.
Could have prepped
that, or, you know, framed it differently or something like that as well. But yeah, so that's something that did happen. I think one thing that was cool that didn't really get into, so there's one type of monster. These carcinoids, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they're supposed to be unique based on, like, who they come out of and everything.
Oh.
So there's a whole, like, roll sheet or, you know, a roll table that's like, you know, this carcinoid has one claw enlarged while the opposite is small and oddly human. I thought that was just really cool. I didn't really get a chance to work that in. / I forgot when I did get the chance.
It is, you know what it reminds me of? Is the first Alien vs. Predator movie when the one alien gets caught in the net and gets that, like, crosshatch pattern on his head of the razor net, but then he breaks out. Mm-hmm. And then when you see that one
it's
Nethead. That's the badass one. He's the scary one, and he kills one of the predators. And, you know, it is a tool for doing something like that with the monsters. Be like, oh, shit, it's, you know, it's the one who came out of my friend because it's the, you know, it's the one who looks this way.
Right, and none of you guys popped. You guys all got infected, but none of you guys
turned during the mission,
right? Mm-hmm. Like, that would have been a great
moment,
you know, oh, the one that comes out of, you know, Sharif's character is decorated with nails and hooks for some reason.
Mm-hmm.
You know, randomization doesn't always make sense at first. You just got to give a little flavor to it. But then, yeah, so, like, that one's the one that came out of Sharif's character.
When we started to kind of figure out, like, what was happening and, like, is this interference on the radio, there's this, like, shriek in the air. And then you start manifesting injury, and obviously that has something to do with infection, but we don't know what. I thought that was really, really good because that's really scary. Like, you heard a sound, and now you're, you know, developing this, like, stigmata injury all over you, and it has something to do...
Stigmata of chaos.
It has something to do with the monster that we just fought in the garage, and just, like... It was a genuinely well written, just like, kind of cosmic horror idea where I was like, I was scared of that, and trying to think, well, like, if that happened to me, it was not hard to role play as a scared character in that situation because it is such a strange and, like, powerless situation that it puts them in.
How'd you like the Halo Flood videotape?
Oh, I love that. That's another great mechanic.
That was all me.
That was you? That didn't come out of the book?
Nope.
That's really good. Because that... Well,
it's
that
in the
episode...
Book, it's in the book, like, what happens. Like, what really happened here. But, like, there's no, like, oh, yeah, the camera and the security footage.
Because that moment in... that moment in the first Halo game is clearly inspired by Aliens when they're, like, looking through everyone's helmet cams during the first part of the mission. But I think it was used more effectively as a horror device in Halo than it was in Aliens.
Yeah.
You get a glimpse, you get this like build up of the situation, then you get a glimpse of the thing, and then you know.
Then you're like, wait a second, I'm in that room right now?
Then the tape ends and you're looking around like, oh, hang on, that's this place, that's here. Where's that fucking thing? But I didn't really get to see the thing or where it went. It's good.
Yeah. So I think that's a great another endorsement of this game is it's easy to pull from the media that, like, you know, goes along with the same vibes, right? It fits seamlessly in, and it's not hard to insert new stuff that goes along with the vibes.
No.
Because it's got such strong vibes.
Yeah. It's all vibes, and it's good vibes.
All right. Anything else about another bug hunt from the player side?
No. I talked about most of the things that I thought was cool. I like how death saves work, but we've already spoiled some of the adventure, so I think I'm, you know. Let's not talk about that, because that went pretty well, I think. Well, it went. Should we just closing thoughts on Mothership?
I guess I also, where the listeners know they didn't get to that, because the first episode ended with you guys getting into the garage.
Mm-hmm.
So the Halo thing. But now they know to look out for it, and they see it, and then, yeah. Anyways, okay. What was the question?
Closing thoughts.
Closing thoughts on Mothership as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
We do not do a rating, like a 5-star rating or nothing like that, because we think they're meaningless. I think it's extremely cool and cohesive. They knew what they were going for and they nailed it.
Yeah.
I would be curious to see how a long-term campaign, like, you know, clearly we were thinking about, like, the ships differently. So, like, I'm curious to see how that would play if you actually had a crew and a ship, what the whoever is game mastering, maybe not even one of us.
Yeah.
What their take on
would do with something that more adventures with characters who survive long enough to go on separate adventures.
Because I think it works extremely well as like a one shot. I'd be curious to see, because there's a lot of mechanics that are like, you know, oh, well, you have a wound, so, like, that's going to be a lasting effect, and, like, it takes such and such time to heal that and all that stuff. I think that is, well, it's just something we didn't test out, so I'd be curious about that.
I got one major criticism of Mothership, aside from just reiterating that I like the visual presentation. I like the overall package. I like the simple gameplay interface, and I really like all the flavorful random tables. It's a great product, and I think I recommend it to anyone who's thinking about it. My criticism is that there is no mechanical support for anything charisma-based or interpersonal. The expectation is that you solve that in roleplay. You know, there is no way in which, you know, you can like roll to convince or roll to charm someone. That is not supported in the stats that you have or any of the
and it's know, explicitly said so mechanics. In the rules.
Yeah.
That it's that way. It's not that we didn't find it. Mm-hmm. It specifically says that in the rules.
It doesn't want you to. It wants you to just, like, roleplay those moments and do it that way and not rely on, like, dice and stats to do that. And while I understand that school of thought and I appreciate what they're going for there, I think there is I think there is value and merit in the game master being able to be like, okay, so you've both stated your positions, you know, roll for some sort of presence or charisma mechanic. I like having that, because what we have seen at the table, and I guess if you feel differently about this, but I feel like we have seen a lot of times a conversation kind of stalemate between players, and like, well, we need to kind of bring this back to what your character would actually do. Like, well, but we need to talk about it. We need to decide it democratically. Well, maybe you just fucking roll for it. Mm-hmm. And whoever rolls better convinces the other, or, you know. And what this is mainly in reference to is a situation where two player characters are in some sort of, you know, like disagreement, or one is trying to convince or, you know, charm or deceive. If this is happening between player characters and there's no mechanical support for that, then I think it does create a little bit of a sticky situation. But the case for that happening might not be as common for everyone else. So, you know, I feel like this game is missing some sort of interpersonal stat, and I know it says it's not missing it, it's not there on purpose. But I kind of miss it.
Mm-hmm.
But cool. That's it.
Well, that's our final thoughts. Food for your brain that makes it itchy, hopefully, as we like to say here.
Yeah, itchy brain. Thanks, Brian, for that one.
Yeah, I was going to throw him something up on the board, but I feel like it wasn't natural, so.
Hmm.
Next time we'll throw something up on the board.
So, we talked about Mothership. We talked about the setting, cool sort of general sci-fi horror. We talked about some of the different novel mechanics that this game is built around, and how well they work together, and how easy the character sheet meshes with character creation and then actually starting to play. We talked about the flow, this TOMS cycle, very cool acronym for creating anything, TOMS. I think, horror or, you know, it's just great for a one-shot, it seems like.
Mm-hmm.
Or any sort of horror anything. Then we talked about some of the unique selling points, the packaging, all the stuff that comes in this starter set or basic core set, it's called. We talked about the app. We talked about some other things that it does really well. And we talked about the Another Bug Hunt starter adventure that comes in the core set, which we have played. And if you keep listening to our show, you'll hear the rest of it.
Yeah, it's very exciting stuff. See what happens. I mean, I already told you what happens at the very end, but if you know anything about Mothership, which you should because we just went through it, that shouldn't bother you much, because
how they get
it's dark and scary, and that is the natural part of the TOMS cycle.
Head on over to 2hgm.com if you like this episode and like our stuff. There's stuff there. The main stuff, of course, is Afterlife, our original post-apocalyptic fantasy role-playing system and setting. It's one cool book, and it comes with a digital PDF copy as well, if you buy the physical book. Or you can buy the digital one for cheaper, but you get the digital one for free if you buy the print.
Yeah, combo package.
Link to our Patreon, where you can participate in things like our live Mothership actual play recording.
Mm-hmm.
And you can heckle the players and us in real time, and also just like Discord stuff,
you know, Q&A's and whatnot, Discord things.
Yep.
Join us on Patreon,
help us do what we do if you like what we do. I think that's about it. Thank you to the Burning Saviors for the use of the song Pond Hill Is Finest is the intro and outro to the show. And we'll see y'all next time.
See you next time.